The taste never left my mouth. 3 months since Mordu's prime, 3 months since I'd cracked open Hadrus's skull like a ration tin and scooped out the gray matter with my fingers, and still I could taste the metallic sweetness on my tongue every morning when I woke. The medics had cleared me for duty after the standard psychological evaluation, but they hadn't looked deep enough. They hadn't seen the way my hands trembled when I held my las gun, not from fear, but from hunger. My name is Taro Cross, serial number MIG-7734, formerly of the 47th Mordian Iron Guard's 3rd Company. The word formerly carried weight now. I was still technically part of the regiment, but my new assignment made it clear where I stood in the Emperor's eyes. The Penal Battalion, a collection of murderers, cowards, and degenerates like myself, gathered together for missions where survival was optional and redemption came only through death. The briefing chamber on the transport ship Inevitable Judgment reeked of unwashed bodies and fierce sweat. 43 of us sat on metal benches, each man carrying his own particular brand of shame. I recognized the types easily enough after 3 months of this existence. The twitchy one in the corner had probably fled from battle. The scarred brute 2 rows ahead likely killed an officer. The thin man picking at his fingernails might have been caught trafficking narcotics or selling equipment to civilians. None of them knew what I'd done, and I intended to keep it that way. Commissar Valk stood at the front of the chamber, his black leather coat pristine despite the ship's grimy atmosphere. His augmetic left eye whirred softly as it focused on each of us in turn, cataloging our sins through whatever data files he'd reviewed. When that red lens settled on me, I felt my stomach clench, not from fear, but from a different kind of anticipation. I'd been thinking about what his brain might taste like, wondering if the augmetic components would add an interesting texture. The thoughts came more frequently now. During morning prayers, I'd find myself studying the back of the man's neck in front of me, imagining how the vertebrae would crack under pressure. During weapons maintenance, I'd catch myself wondering if my combat knife was sharp enough to separate joints cleanly. The voice in my head, the one that sounded exactly like Hadrus, encouraged these contemplations with whispered suggestions and anatomical advice. Valk began explaining our mission without preamble. Hive Tertius on the world of Golgoth had gone silent 6 weeks ago. The last Vox transmission had been a garbled mess of screaming and static that the Adeptus Administratum classified as a potential uprising. Our job was simple reconnaissance into the underhive ruins beneath the main population centers. We were to establish the nature of the threat and transmit our findings back to the fleet before the main assault began. The Commissar made no attempt to sugarcoat our chances. This was a suicide mission dressed up as reconnaissance, and everyone in the room knew it. The previous scouting force had consisted of 2 full companies of Cadian shock troops, veterans with decades of experience. They'd entered the Underhive 7 days ago and hadn't been heard from since. Now they were sending 43 criminals with las guns and a prayer. I studied the tactical displays as Valk activated them, showing cross-sections of Hive Tertius's lower levels. The architecture was standard Imperial design, but centuries of neglect had turned the Underhive into a maze of collapsed passages and jury-rigged structures. Perfect territory for an ambush, assuming anything was still alive down there to Mount 1. The thermal readings showed no life signs, but the equipment was old, and the Hive's industrial heat signatures could be masking smaller contacts. My attention drifted as Valk continued his briefing. The man sitting directly in front of me had a particularly thick neck, corded with muscle from years of manual labor before whatever crime had landed him here. I could see the pulse beating steadily beneath his skin, and I found myself timing it unconsciously. 68 beats per minute, healthy cardiovascular system, probably good meat on those shoulders too. Hadrus's voice whispered approval in the back of my mind, commenting on the man's probable nutritional value. The voice had grown stronger over the past month, more coherent in its suggestions. Sometimes I could almost see him standing beside me, his skull still caved in from where I'd struck him with the rock gray matter leaking down his face as he smiled and pointed out potential meals among our fellow guardsmen. The hunger was getting worse. Standard rations tasted like ash now, and even the protein bars that passed for meat in our supply packs left me unsatisfied. I tried supplementing with whatever I could scavenge during our brief shore leaves, but nothing helped. My body craved something specific, something I'd only tasted once during those desperate hours on Mortu's Prime when Hadrus and I had been trapped in that collapsed bunker with no food and no hope of rescue. I told myself at the time that it was survival, pure necessity. We'd been pinned down for 4 days with nothing but a few drops of water from a leaking pipe. Hadris had been wounded, delirious from blood loss and infection. When he'd finally stopped breathing, I'd convinced myself that letting his body rot would be wasteful. The Emperor provided even in the darkest moments. That's what I told myself as I'd used my combat knife to separate the choice cuts. But that was a lie, and I knew it even then. I'd killed him, smashed his skull in while he slept because I couldn't wait any longer. The hunger had been building for hours, and his labored breathing had been driving me mad with anticipation. The wound in his leg had been healing fine until I'd reopened it during the night, letting infection set in while he was unconscious. I'd fed him contaminated water from my canteen, water I'd mixed with dirt and debris to make him sicker. The taste had been incredible, better than anything I'd ever experienced. The texture of the brain tissue, the way it had dissolved on my tongue, the rich iron flavor of the blood. I'd eaten everything I could, saving some of the choicer pieces for later, wrapping them in cloth torn from his uniform. When the rescue team had finally broken through 3 days later, they'd found me cradled against what remained of his skeleton, tears streaming down my face as I mourned my lost comrade. They'd believed my story. Traumatized guardsmen, driven to desperate measures by starvation and isolation. The regimental chaplain had even commended me for my will to survive, saying that the Emperor had tested me and found me worthy. If only they'd known how much I'd enjoyed every bite. Now, sitting in this briefing chamber surrounded by other condemned men, I could feel that same hunger building again. 3 months of standard rations had left me weak and irritable. My hands shook constantly, and I'd lost significant weight despite the protein supplements the medics had prescribed. Sleep brought no rest, only dreams of cracking bones and warm flesh. Hadris visited me every night, sometimes bringing friends from our old squad, all of them encouraging me to feed again. Valk finished his tactical overview and moved on to equipment distribution. Each man would carry standard reconnaissance gear plus emergency supplies for a week-long deployment. No heavy weapons, no Vox equipment beyond short-range comm units. We were expendable assets being sent into an unknown situation with minimal support. The message was clear: don't expect to come back. The man with the thick neck shifted in his seat and I caught a whiff of his body odor. Unwashed sweat mixed with the metallic scent of fear, but underneath that was something else. Something that made my mouth water. I realized I was leaning forward, breathing deeper, and forced myself to sit back before anyone noticed. This mission might provide opportunities that the transport ship couldn't offer. Down in the Underhive, away from the watchful eyes of commissars and fellow guardsmen, accidents could happen. Men could disappear in the maze of tunnels and collapsed structures. Bodies could be lost in rockfalls or consumed by whatever had silenced the Hive in the first place. And if I was careful, if I planned properly, I might finally be able to satisfy this gnawing hunger that had been eating me alive for months. Hadris's voice grew louder in my head, more insistent. He was telling me about the others in the room, pointing out weaknesses and opportunities. The thin man with the nervous tic would be easy to isolate. The older guardsman with the limp wouldn't be able to run if something went wrong. The young one trying so hard to look brave was probably inexperienced enough to trust a veteran like me. I forced myself to focus on Valk's words as he outlined our insertion plan. Drop pods would deliver us to the Hive's upper levels, and from there we'd make our way down through the residential sectors to the Underhive proper. Standard sweep and clear procedures, with regular check-ins every 6 hours. Any sign of hostiles was to be reported immediately, though given the fate of the previous scouting force, immediate evacuation seemed unlikely. The commissar's augmetic eye swept across the room one final time before he dismissed us to prepare our equipment. As the other men filed out, talking quietly among themselves about the mission ahead, I remained seated for a moment longer. The hunger was building again, stronger now that I'd been thinking about it. My hands were trembling and I could taste copper in my mouth. 3 months was too long to go without proper nourishment. Down in the Underhive, surrounded by darkness and death, I would finally have the opportunity to feed again. The thought of warm flesh and rich blood made my vision blur with anticipation. Hadris whispered encouragement in my ear, his voice clearer now than it had been since Mortu's prime. The drop pod's impact nearly shattered my teeth as we slammed into the upper levels of Hive Tertius. The retro thrusters had fired late, and the landing felt more like controlled demolition than military precision. Around me, the other members of our makeshift squad groaned and cursed as they unbuckled their harnesses. The acrid smell of burned propellant mixed with the stale air that leaked through the pod's seals, carrying with it the unmistakable odor of decay. I was the first one out, stepping through the hatch into what had once been a residential hab block. The architecture was standard imperial construction from the 38th millennium, all reinforced rockcrete and iron girders, but centuries of neglect had taken their toll. Water stains ran down the walls like dark tears, and chunks of ceiling had collapsed to create treacherous piles of debris. Emergency lighting strips flickered sporadically, casting everything in an intermittent red glow that made shadows dance and shift. The silence was wrong, not the peaceful quiet of an empty building, but the oppressive weight of a tomb. No hum of air recyclers, no distant sounds of human activity, no mechanical noise from the hive's countless systems. Just the occasional drip of water and the soft scraping of our boots against broken masonry. Guardsman Thale emerged from the pod behind me, favoring his left leg where an old shrapnel wound had never properly healed. He was thin to the point of emaciation, with hollow cheeks and dark circles under his eyes that spoke of chronic malnutrition, the kind of weakness that would make him easy prey if circumstances demanded it. My stomach clenched at the thought, and I had to force myself to look away from the prominent tendons in his neck. The rest of our squad consisted of 8 other condemned men, each carrying their own burden of shame and desperation. Valk had organized us into 3-man fire teams with himself as overall commander, though his authority would mean little once we descended into the Underhive proper. Down there in the darkness and confusion, accidents happened with disturbing frequency. We moved through the hab block in standard formation, weapons ready despite the apparent emptiness. The residential units we passed showed signs of hasty evacuation. Doors hung open, revealing scattered possessions and overturned furniture. In one apartment, a child's toy lay abandoned on the floor, its paint worn away by countless small hands. The sight should have stirred some emotion in me, but all I felt was mild curiosity about where the inhabitants had gone and whether their remains might still be recoverable. The access shaft to the lower levels was located 3 blocks away, according to our tactical data. We made our way through empty streets that should have bustled with activity even at this hour. The market stalls stood abandoned, their metal frameworks stripped of goods and decorations. Propaganda posters peeled from the walls, their bold proclamations about imperial glory fading into illegible smears. Halfway to our objective, we discovered the first evidence of recent military activity. A Chimera transport sat abandoned at an intersection, its hull scarred by Laz fire and what looked like claw marks. The vehicle's rear hatch hung open, revealing an interior splattered with dark stains that had dried to a rust brown color. Equipment lay scattered around the transport, including several empty ration packs and a Vox unit that had been smashed beyond repair. I knelt beside the Chimera's tracks, studying the ground for signs of what had happened here. The rockcrete was cracked and pitted, with more of those strange gouges that suggested something with natural weapons had been involved. But there were also boot prints, dozens of them, leading away from the transport in multiple directions. Some of the prints showed the distinctive tread pattern of Imperial Guard combat boots, while others were bare feet or crude civilian footwear. The implications made my skin crawl. Either the guard unit had been attacked and scattered, or they had abandoned their transport and fled on foot. Neither scenario suggested a routine pacification operation. Something had gone very wrong here, and we were walking directly into whatever had caused it. We reached the access shaft without further incident, though the oppressive atmosphere seemed to grow heavier with each step. The shaft itself was a maintenance tunnel that descended through the hive's structural levels, eventually connecting to the underhive proper. Emergency lighting illuminated the first few meters, but beyond that lay only darkness. The descent took nearly an hour, our boots echoing off the metal walls despite our attempts at stealth. The air grew thicker and more humid as we went deeper, carrying strange odors that I couldn't identify. Not the usual smells of human habitation or industrial processes, but something organic and unsettling, like meat that had been left too long in a warm place. When we finally reached the underhive level, the change was immediately apparent. The carefully maintained infrastructure of the upper hive gave way to a chaotic maze of jury-rigged passages and improvised structures. Pipes and cables snaked along the walls in seemingly random patterns, and the floor was uneven rockcrete that had been patched and repatched countless times over the centuries. The first body appeared 20 meters from the shaft entrance. It was a civilian, an older woman whose emaciated frame suggested she had been struggling to survive even before whatever killed her. But it was the condition of the corpse that made my breath catch. The flesh had been systematically stripped from the bones, not by scavengers or decomposition, but by something with intelligence and purpose. The cuts were too clean, too deliberate to be accidental. More bodies lay scattered throughout the passage ahead. Men, women, children, all showing the same methodical butchery. But these weren't random killings. Someone had taken time with each corpse, removing specific portions while leaving others untouched. The pattern was disturbingly familiar, reminding me of my own work on Mortu's Prime when I had carefully selected the choicest cuts from Hadrus's remains. Thale made a retching sound behind me, though he managed to keep his last meal down. The others showed varying degrees of revulsion and fear, but I found myself studying the bodies with professional interest. Whoever had done this possessed both skill and experience. They knew anatomy, understood which parts would provide the best nourishment, and had the tools necessary to work efficiently. We pressed deeper into the underhive, following what appeared to be a main thoroughfare between the ramshackle structures. The buildings here were a mixture of original imperial construction and later additions, creating a vertical maze that stretched up into darkness. Most showed signs of recent habitation, but now they stood empty and silent. The next discovery made even my hardened stomach turn. We found them in what had once been a small shrine dedicated to the Emperor, tucked away in an alcove between two residential blocks. The sacred space had been desecrated in ways that defied comprehension. The walls were decorated with strips of human skin that had been carefully flayed and arranged in patterns that might have been religious symbols or simply the mad scribblings of a diseased mind. At the center of the shrine sat an altar that had been constructed from human bones. Femurs and tibias formed the base, while smaller bones had been used to create intricate geometric patterns across the surface. Skulls were arranged around the perimeter, their empty sockets staring out at anyone who approached. But it was the gnawed condition of many bones that truly disturbed me. Teeth marks were clearly visible on the larger specimens, and several had been cracked open to access the marrow within. The smell in the shrine was overwhelming, not just the expected odor of decay, but something else underneath it. Something that made my mouth water despite my revulsion. The scent of cooked meat, rich and savory, lingering in the air like an invitation. I forced myself to examine the altar more closely, looking for clues about who might have constructed it. The workmanship was crude but effective, suggesting someone with limited tools but considerable motivation. Scraps of Imperial Guard equipment were scattered around the base, including portions of flak armor and a lasgun power pack that had been drained completely. The implications were becoming clearer with each discovery. The missing guard units hadn't been killed by Xenos or heretics. They had been consumed by something far worse. Something that wore human faces and spoke the Emperor's name while committing acts that would make demons recoil in horror. As we prepared to leave the desecrated shrine, I noticed Thale had grown even paler than usual. The wounded guardsman was struggling to keep up with our pace, his injured leg obviously causing him significant pain. Sweat beaded on his forehead despite the cool air, and his breathing had become labored. He would slow us down if his condition worsened, potentially compromising the entire mission. The practical solution was obvious. In a combat situation, wounded men who couldn't maintain the pace were often left behind for later recovery. But down here in this maze of corpse-choked tunnels, there would be no later recovery. Thale would simply disappear, another casualty of the Underhive's dangers, and if he was going to die anyway, it seemed wasteful to let his body go to the same fate as the others we had found. The hunger was growing stronger now, fed by the sights and smells we had encountered. My hands trembled as I gripped my lasgun and I could taste copper in my mouth. Hadrus's voice had returned with renewed vigor, whispering suggestions about how easy it would be to arrange an accident. A stumble in the darkness, a fall into one of the many pits that dotted the underhive floor, a stray shot during a moment of confusion. We continued our advance through the twisted passages, cataloging more evidence of the horror that had befallen Hive Tertius. Empty guard positions showed signs of hasty abandonment, with equipment scattered and defensive positions left incomplete. Vox equipment had been systematically destroyed, ensuring that no calls for help could reach the surface. Someone had been very thorough in their preparations. The realization struck me as we paused at another intersection. Our mission parameters had been deliberately vague, focusing on reconnaissance rather than specific objectives. We had been sent down here with minimal support and no clear extraction plan. The previous guard units had likely received similar orders, walking into the same trap that now awaited us. We weren't here to gather intelligence or assess threats. We were bait, sent to feed whatever lurked in the depths of the Underhive. The Administratum had written us off before we ever left the transport, condemning us to the same fate as our predecessors. The only question was whether we would realize the truth before it was too late to matter, but perhaps that knowledge could work to my advantage. In the chaos and confusion that would inevitably follow, opportunities would present themselves. Thale's condition continued to deteriorate, and the others were growing increasingly nervous as we encountered more evidence of the horror that surrounded us. Fear made people careless, and carelessness created chances for those patient enough to wait for them. The passages ahead stretched into darkness, promising more revelations about the fate of Hive Tertius and its inhabitants. Whatever we found there, I was certain of one thing. Not all of us would be leaving the Underhive alive. The only question was who would be doing the eating and who would end up as the meal. The opportunity came during our third rest period, 6 hours after we discovered the bone altar. Commissar Valk had ordered a 4-hour stand down in what appeared to be a relatively secure junction between three main passages. The area offered good sight lines in all directions and had only one easily defended entrance, making it ideal for a temporary camp. Most of the squad had settled against the walls, trying to catch what sleep they could on the cold rock creek. Thale had positioned himself slightly apart from the others, his injured leg stretched out before him as he tried to find a comfortable position. The wound had worsened during our march through the Underhive, and I could see fresh blood seeping through the crude bandages he'd applied that morning. His breathing was shallow and rapid, the kind of pattern that suggested infection was spreading through his system. He wouldn't last another day at this pace, and we all knew it. I volunteered for the first watch, claiming I was too wired to sleep after everything we'd seen. Valk accepted my offer with a grunt of approval, settling into his own rest position near the junction's center where he could observe all approaches. Within 20 minutes, the soft sounds of snoring indicated that most of the squad had managed to find some measure of rest despite our grim surroundings. Thale remained awake, shifting restlessly as pain from his wound prevented sleep. I approached him quietly, kneeling beside his position with my medkit in hand. I explained that I'd noticed his condition deteriorating and offered to help change his bandages. The grateful look in his eyes made what I was about to do almost too easy. The combat knife slid between his ribs with barely a whisper, angled upward to pierce the heart and ensure a quick death. His eyes widened in shock and confusion, but the blade's placement prevented any sound beyond a soft gasp. I held him steady as his body went limp, one hand covering his mouth while the other maintained pressure on the knife handle. The entire process took less than 30 seconds. Moving the body was more challenging. I had to drag him deeper into the shadows at the junction's far end, away from where the others slept. The sound of his equipment scraping against the rockcrete seemed impossibly loud in the silence, but none of my sleeping squad mates stirred. Years of military service had taught them to sleep through minor disturbances, a habit that now worked to my advantage. The first cuts were tentative, almost reverent. I used my combat knife to open the torso, working carefully to avoid damaging the organs within. The liver came free with minimal effort, dark and rich with blood that had pooled there during his final moments. I wrapped it in a section of cloth torn from his uniform, setting it aside for later consumption. The heart followed, then portions of muscle tissue from the thighs and shoulders. Each piece I removed brought back memories of Mortu's prime and the desperate hunger that had driven me to feed on Hadrus. But this time was different. This wasn't survival necessity or battlefield desperation. This was choice, deliberate and calculated. The realization should have horrified me, but instead I felt only satisfaction as I worked. The taste was everything I remembered and more. The liver dissolved on my tongue like the finest delicacy, its metallic richness flooding my mouth with flavors that standard rations could never provide. The heart was tougher but more satisfying, requiring careful chewing that released waves of iron-sweet blood. For the first time in months, the gnawing hunger in my stomach began to subside. As I fed, Hadrus's voice grew stronger in my mind. He praised my technique, offered suggestions for preserving the remaining meat, and pointed out which cuts would provide the most nutrition. But his words carried a different quality now, less like memory and more like an actual presence sharing my thoughts. When I looked up from my meal, I could see him standing in the shadows, his crushed skull leaking gray matter as he smiled with approval. The transformation in my perception was immediate and profound. The Underhive's oppressive atmosphere lifted slightly, revealing details I hadn't noticed before. Scratch marks on the walls that formed patterns too deliberate to be accidental. Stains on the rockcrete that weren't just rust or water damage, but carefully placed symbols. The bones we'd found weren't random remains, but components of a larger design that stretched throughout the tunnel system. Someone had been here before us, someone who understood the same truths I was beginning to grasp. The Emperor wasn't just humanity's protector and guide. He was the ultimate consumer, the devourer of souls and flesh who demanded the same dedication from his most devoted servants. The realization filled me with a sense of purpose I hadn't felt since before Mortu's prime. When I returned to my watch position, I noticed that two other guardsmen had awakened and were observing me with interest. Neither seemed alarmed by my absence or the faint smell of blood that clung to my uniform. Instead, they watched with the hollow-eyed stare of men who had seen too much and understood too little. I recognized the expression from my own reflection during the weeks following Hadrus's death. The first was Kine, a former Hive ganger whose scarred face spoke of a violent past. He'd been condemned for murdering a fellow guardsman during a dispute over rations, though he'd never admitted to the crime. Now he studied me with calculating eyes, as if trying to determine whether I represented threat or opportunity. The second was Dressed, younger than the rest of us, but with the hollow cheeks and nervous mannerisms of someone who'd already experienced more horror than his mind could process. Neither man asked questions about where I'd been or what I'd been doing. In the penal battalion, such inquiries were considered poor etiquette at best and potentially dangerous at worst. But I could see understanding beginning to dawn in their expressions, the kind of recognition that passed between predators who had identified their own kind. The remaining hours of our rest period passed without incident, though I noticed both Kine and Dressed seemed more alert and focused than they had during our earlier march. When Valk finally roused the squad for movement, they fell in beside me naturally, forming an informal group within our larger formation. The Commissar noted the change but made no comment, perhaps attributing it to the natural bonding that occurred between soldiers under stress. We discovered the first evidence of the previous guard force an hour after resuming our advance. The remains of a checkpoint had been constructed at a major intersection, complete with sandbag emplacements and firing positions that commanded excellent fields of fire down three separate passages. But the position had been abandoned from within rather than overrun by external assault. Equipment lay scattered throughout the checkpoint in patterns that suggested hasty departure rather than combat damage. Ration packs had been torn open and partially consumed, their contents scattered across the rockcrete. Ammunition clips were empty, though there were no Law's burn marks or other signs of recent fighting. Most telling were the personal items left behind, including picked captures of families and religious icons that no guardsman would willingly abandon. The defensive positions themselves told a more disturbing story. The sandbags had been rearranged to face inward rather than outward, as if the real threat had come from within the checkpoint rather than from the passages beyond. Bloodstains on the rockcrete formed patterns too regular to be accidental, suggesting that whatever had happened here had been methodical and deliberate. Valk spent several minutes examining the scene, his augmetic eye recording details for later analysis. His expression grew increasingly grim as he cataloged the evidence, and I could see him beginning to understand the true nature of our situation. We weren't investigating an enemy incursion or civilian uprising. We were following in the footsteps of men who had faced the same corruption that was beginning to take hold within our own ranks. The discovery that confirmed my suspicions lay deeper within the checkpoint's interior. A crude altar had been constructed from guard equipment, with lasgun barrels forming a makeshift cross and flak armor plates arranged in ritualistic patterns around its base. But it was the offerings placed upon this altar that revealed the true nature of what had occurred here. Fresh human organs were arranged in careful patterns across the altar's surface. Hearts, livers, kidneys, and other choice cuts that had been removed with surgical precision and presented as sacred offerings. The smell of cooked meat hung heavy in the air, suggesting that ritual consumption had been part of whatever ceremony had taken place here. Candles made from rendered human fat provided flickering illumination that cast dancing shadows across the grisly display. Most disturbing were the imperial religious texts that had been modified to support this new doctrine. Pages from the uplifting primer had been annotated with crude handwriting that transformed standard prayers into invocations of consumption and predation. The Emperor's role as humanity's protector had been reinterpreted as that of the ultimate predator, demanding that his servants follow his example by consuming the flesh of the weak and unworthy. I found myself studying these corrupted texts with growing fascination rather than horror. The theological arguments were crude but compelling, drawing connections between imperial doctrine and the natural order of predation that governed all life. The Emperor consumed the souls of psychers to maintain his existence on the Golden Throne. Why shouldn't his most devoted servants follow that example by consuming the flesh of those too weak to serve effectively? Kine and Drest had positioned themselves beside me as I examined the altar, their breathing growing rapid and excited as they absorbed the implications of what we were seeing. Neither man spoke, but I could sense their growing understanding of the truths being revealed. The hunger that had driven me to feed on Thale wasn't madness or corruption. It was enlightenment, a recognition of humanity's true place in the galaxy's food chain. The voice in my head had grown stronger during our examination of the checkpoint, but now I realized it wasn't just Hadris speaking to me. Other voices had joined his, creating a chorus of the consumed that offered guidance and encouragement. They spoke of the liberation that came with accepting one's role as predator, the clarity of purpose that followed the first taste of human flesh, and the strength that could be gained by consuming the weak. But more disturbing was the realization that these voices weren't entirely in my head. Kine and Drest were responding to whispers I couldn't quite hear, their eyes tracking movement in empty air as if they too were receiving guidance from unseen advisors. The corruption was spreading beyond my individual madness, taking root in minds made vulnerable by desperation and despair. When we finally left the checkpoint behind, our small group had grown to include two more guardsmen who had observed our behavior and drawn their own conclusions. Neither Jorik nor Than spoke of what they had seen or understood, but their presence beside us as we resumed our march spoke volumes. The hunger was becoming contagious, spreading through our ranks like a plague that infected souls rather than bodies. The passages ahead led deeper into the Underhive's heart, where the previous guard force had made their final discoveries. But we were no longer the same men who had descended from the upper hive hours earlier. Something fundamental had changed in our nature, a transformation that went beyond individual madness to encompass our entire purpose. We were becoming something new, something that the Emperor's enemies would have cause to fear. The Underhive itself seemed to respond to our transformation. Shadows moved in patterns that suggested intelligence rather than random air currents. The walls whispered with voices that offered encouragement and guidance to those willing to listen. Even the stale air carried scents that spoke of opportunities waiting in the darkness ahead, chances to feed and grow strong on the weakness of others. Our final discovery of that day confirmed what I had begun to suspect about the true nature of our mission. We found them in what had once been the Underhive's central plaza, a vast open space surrounded by the skeletal remains of commercial structures. They were the survivors of the previous guard force, or what they had become after weeks of exposure to the Underhive's corrupting influence. The survivors of the previous guard force had arranged themselves in a perfect circle around what remained of the plaza's central fountain. 23 men sat motionless in the flickering light of improvised torches, their uniforms torn and stained with substances I preferred not to identify. Each held a human skull in his lap, cradled like a precious relic, while their lips moved in silent prayer to something that wasn't quite the Emperor I'd been taught to worship. At the circle's center stood an object that made my breath catch in my throat. The idol was carved from black stone that seemed to absorb light rather than reflect it, standing nearly 3 meters tall and shaped vaguely like a man seated on a throne. But the proportions were wrong, elongated and twisted in ways that hurt to look at directly. The face bore a resemblance to the Emperor's official portraits, but the features had been stretched and distorted until they suggested something far more predatory than divine. The statue's mouth hung open in what might have been a scream or a roar of hunger, revealing rows of carved teeth that extended deep into the throat. Its hands rested on the throne's armrests, but the fingers had been extended into claws that gripped skulls identical to those held by the worshippers. Most disturbing were the eyes, which seemed to track movement despite being carved from the same lightless stone as the rest of the figure. The guardsmen around the idol showed signs of prolonged exposure to whatever influence emanated from the thing. Their skin had taken on a grayish pallor that reminded me uncomfortably of spoiled meat, and their eyes had sunken deep into their skulls. Several bore obvious bite marks on their arms and necks, wounds that had healed but left distinctive patterns of tooth marks in the flesh. When they finally noticed our approach, they turned toward us with expressions of rapturous welcome rather than surprise or alarm. The leader of this corrupted group rose from his position directly in front of the idol, still clutching his skull as he approached our formation. I recognized him from the tactical briefings as Colonel Malthorne, the commanding officer of the 23rd Cadian who had led the original reconnaissance force. His face had been gaunt even in the official portraits, but now it resembled a death's head wrapped in parchment-thin skin. When he opened his mouth to address us, I could see that several of his teeth had been filed to points. Malthorne explained their situation with the calm certainty of a man who had found absolute truth in madness. The idol had been discovered 3 weeks ago in the deepest levels of the Underhive, hidden in a chamber that predated imperial settlement of this world by millennia. The moment his men had entered that chamber, they had begun to hear the voice of the true emperor, not the corpse thing that rotted on Terra's golden throne, but the vital, hungry god who demanded proper worship from his servants. The voice had taught them about humanity's real nature as the galaxy's apex predators, creatures designed to consume and dominate all other forms of life. The weakness and decay that plagued the Imperium stemmed from a fundamental misunderstanding of this truth, a corruption of the Emperor's original message by weak-willed priests who feared to embrace their predatory heritage. Only by accepting their role as hunters and consumers could humanity reclaim its rightful place among the stars. As Malthorne spoke, I felt the familiar presence of Hadrus growing stronger in my mind, but now he was joined by other voices that seemed to emanate from the idol itself. They whispered confirmation of everything the Colonel described, adding details about the proper rituals of consumption and the strength that could be gained from feeding on human flesh. The voices spoke with authority that brooked no argument, carrying the weight of divine revelation rather than madness. The other members of our squad reacted to Malthorne's words with varying degrees of horror and fascination. Valk maintained his composure, but I could see his augmetic eye focusing repeatedly on the idol, as if trying to record details his organic vision couldn't properly process. Several guardsmen had begun backing toward the plaza's exits, their survival instincts overriding military discipline. But Kine, Drest, and the others who had joined our informal group moved closer to the circle of worshippers, drawn by the same hunger that had been growing within me. Malthorne gestured toward the idol with reverent pride, explaining how its presence had transformed his men from ordinary soldiers into something far more worthy of the Emperor's service. The weak had been culled from their ranks through ritual combat and consumption, while the strong had grown stronger by feeding on their flesh. Each meal had brought them closer to understanding their true purpose, until they had achieved the perfect state of predatory enlightenment that allowed them to commune directly with their god. The process had not been without casualties, he admitted with a smile that revealed his sharpened teeth. Nearly half of his original force had proven too weak to accept the transformation, clinging to outdated notions of morality and restraint that marked them as unfit for service. These failures had provided nourishment for their betters, their deaths serving the greater good by strengthening those worthy of survival. Their skulls now served as sacred vessels for communion with the idol's divine presence. As if responding to some unspoken signal, the circle of worshippers began a low chant that seemed to resonate through the plaza's broken stones. The words were Imperial Gothic, but twisted into forms that transformed familiar prayers into invocations of hunger and predation. The Emperor's role as mankind's protector became that of the ultimate hunter, while humanity's duty to serve became an obligation to consume and dominate. The theological framework remained intact, but its meaning had been inverted into something that justified any atrocity committed in pursuit of strength. The idol itself seemed to respond to their worship, its carved features shifting subtly in the torchlight as if the stone were somehow alive. The empty eye sockets appeared to focus on different members of our group, weighing and measuring each man's potential for corruption. When that terrible gaze fell upon me, I felt a surge of recognition that went beyond anything I had experienced before. This thing knew what I had done, understood the hunger that drove me, and approved of my transformation. The voices in my head crescendoed into a symphony of encouragement and instruction. They spoke of the chamber beneath the plaza where the idol had been discovered, a sacred space where the walls themselves were carved with the true history of humanity's rise to dominance. Ancient murals depicted the emperor not as a benevolent protector, but as a cosmic predator who had consumed entire species to fuel his ascension to godhood. The weak religions that had grown up around his worship were revealed as deliberate corruptions designed to keep humanity from achieving its full potential. But more importantly, the voices revealed the true purpose of our mission. Commissar Valk had not sent us here to gather intelligence or assess threats. He had sent us to feed the idol, to provide fresh meat for its growing hunger and new converts for its expanding congregation. The systematic destruction of communication equipment, the careful selection of condemned men for the mission, the complete lack of extraction planning, all of it had been orchestrated to deliver us directly into the idol's influence. The realization should have filled me with rage at being manipulated, but instead I felt only gratitude for being chosen to participate in something so profound. The hunger that had tormented me since Mordu's prime wasn't a symptom of madness or corruption. It was a calling, a divine summons to embrace my true nature as one of the Emperor's chosen predators. Every bite of human flesh I had consumed had brought me closer to this moment of revelation. Kain and Drest had moved to stand beside me, their faces reflecting the same understanding that was dawning in my own mind. The other members of our informal group followed, drawn by an instinct deeper than conscious thought. We were becoming something new, something that transcended the limitations of ordinary humanity through the sacrament of consumption. The weak would feed the strong, and the strong would grow stronger through their sacrifice. Valk finally broke his silence, his augmetic eye whirring as it attempted to process what he was witnessing. He spoke of duty and loyalty to the Imperium, of the heresy inherent in worshipping false idols and consuming human flesh. But his words carried no conviction, and I could see doubt creeping into his expression as he struggled to reconcile his training with the evidence before him. The idol's influence was working on him as well, eroding his certainty and replacing it with hunger. The confrontation that followed was brief and decisive. The remaining members of our squad who had not yet succumbed to the idol's influence made a desperate attempt to retreat from the plaza, but Malthorn's converted guardsmen moved to block their escape. What ensued was less a battle than a feeding frenzy, as the corrupted soldiers overwhelmed their former comrades with tooth and claw rather than conventional weapons. I found myself in the thick of the violence, my combat knife finding its way between ribs and across throats with a precision that surprised me. But this wasn't the calculated murder I had committed against Thale. This was something primal and necessary, the culling of the weak to make room for the strong. Each death brought a surge of satisfaction that went beyond mere bloodlust, a sense of righteous purpose that validated every choice I had made since Mordu's prime. The taste of fresh blood on my lips triggered a transformation that went beyond physical sensation. My perception of the plaza shifted, revealing layers of meaning that had been invisible before. The broken stones beneath our feet formed patterns that told the story of humanity's rise from primitive scavengers to galactic predators. The shadows cast by our torches danced in configurations that spelled out the true names of the Emperor's aspects, titles that spoke of consumption and dominion rather than protection and sacrifice. When the violence ended, only 13 members of our original squad remained alive, but we were no longer the same men who had descended into the Underhive hours earlier. The idol's influence had completed our transformation, burning away the weakness and hesitation that had limited our potential. We were the Emperor's chosen predators, blessed with the clarity of purpose that came from accepting our true nature. Malthorn welcomed us into his congregation with the enthusiasm of a prophet greeting new disciples. He explained the rituals that would complete our initiation, the ceremonies of consumption that would bind us permanently to the idol's service. The skulls of our fallen comrades would serve as our communion vessels, while their flesh would provide the sacred meal that marked our full acceptance into the Brotherhood of Predators. As I knelt before the idol with my skull cup filled with warm blood, I finally understood the true scope of what was happening. This wasn't an isolated incident of corruption in a single hive world. This was the beginning of a new phase in humanity's evolution, a return to the predatory nature that had been suppressed by millennia of false doctrine and misguided morality. The idol was just one of many such artifacts scattered throughout the galaxy, each one serving as a focal point for this transformation. The voice that spoke to me now was unmistakably the Emperor's, but not the weakened whisper of the corpse on Terra's throne. This was the vital, hungry god who had walked among humanity during the Great Crusade, the cosmic predator who had devoured alien civilizations to fuel his own ascension. He had been waiting for servants worthy of his true nature, disciples who could embrace the necessity of consumption without flinching from its implications. My role in this grand design was becoming clear. I would return to the surface not as a survivor bearing intelligence about the Underhive's threats, but as a missionary carrying the true gospel of predation to those ready to hear it. The corruption would spread through the Imperial Guard regiment by regiment, world by world, until humanity finally cast off the shackles of weakness that had held it back for so long. The ritual of initiation lasted through what remained of the night, culminating in a feast that would have horrified the man I had been mere days before. But I was no longer that man. I was something new, something stronger, something worthy of the Emperor's true favor. The taste of human flesh no longer carried the weight of sin or madness. It was communion with divinity, a sacrament that bound me to powers beyond mortal comprehension. When dawn finally broke over Hive Tertius, filtering down through the Underhive's twisted passages in pale shafts of light, I stood before my new congregation as their chosen leader. Malthorn had passed the mantle of command to me during the night's ceremonies, recognizing in me the potential to spread our sacred hunger beyond the confines of this single world. The other converts looked to me with the devotion of true believers, ready to follow wherever the Emperor's voice might lead them. The return journey to the surface would begin within hours, but we would not be reporting the failure of our mission to Commissar Volk. Instead, we would be bringing the gift of transformation to those above, sharing the revelation that had saved us from the weakness that plagued the rest of humanity. Some would resist, clinging to outdated notions of morality and restraint. They would feed the strong, their sacrifice serving the greater good by nourishing those worthy of survival. Others would embrace the truth with the same hunger that had driven me to consume Hadris in that collapsed bunker on Mortu's Prime. They would join our growing congregation, adding their strength to our cause and spreading the infection of enlightenment throughout the Imperium's vast military machine. Regiment by regiment, world by world, humanity would remember its true nature as the galaxy's apex predators. The Emperor's hunger would be satisfied at last, and his chosen servants would take their rightful place as the devourers of the weak. The age of false mercy and misguided compassion was ending. The age of sacred consumption had begun.